the Six Nations Championship, the pinnacle of Northern Hemisphere rugby. Roses, roosters, feathers, thistles, shamrocks and il tricolore. No quarter given, no holds barred. Ancient rivalries renewed as winter turns to spring. Nations bound by pride and legends forged in mud and blood. Reputations made and lost in 80 minutes of battle. Tradition, tension, excitement, and, oh, the anthems. This is the Six Nations, and this is the Sporting Almanac Podcast. The Six Nations, Ben.
It is.
It's here.
Yeah, a staple.
Best time of the year.
A staple in the calendar.
Silver lining on the horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every weekend for the next 6 weeks, give or take, with a 2 week gap in between at some point, I think.
No, it's all over 6 weeks now.
Oh, it is.
That's one thing they've changed this year.
Just back to back to back. Didn't even notice that.
Used to be over 7 weeks. There is 1 week off between, is it three and four? But whatever. It is now over a six-week period, which players aren't happy about.
No.
Because they think it was a slog to begin with.
Well, to be fair, they probably have a point in this tournament. It is pretty hostile. Just rivalries everywhere you look.
And there's no easy matches.
Yeah.
And there's no non-physical matches. And if teams are weaker, as Wales have been, or Italy who generally are, they're still going to give it their all.
Yeah.
They're still going to hit hard.
No, and especially when you go away to those countries, that's the kicker, isn't it? Is away games in the Six Nations are just infamously difficult.
Indeed, yeah. Anyway, where do we start then with the Six Nations?
Well, it's probably worth saying we've squeaked ourselves in just before the tournament started.
Well, we hopefully have squeaked ourselves in.
Yeah, we've left it
late.
The
chances of anyone listening to the whole episode before the tournament starts is slim.
Yeah, very slim. Yeah, I've been away, and then when we came back, our calendars didn't quite align as we'd have liked. So we've done our best to get this out before the first game, but most people will probably listen to it retrospectively. That doesn't matter. The point is here, we're going to be, and correct me if I have got the strategy wrong here, Jack, but we're just going to talk about the Six Nations generally in this episode. The first game will have finished. And then what we're going to do in our little Six Nations series is we're going to do an episode dedicated to each country, just a short one like we did with the Winter Olympics, where we're just going to tell some stories about their triumphs and celebrate each nation and maybe, kick people in the right place occasionally.
Every nation other than Italy has won this tournament at some point. Obviously, it used to be the Five Nations going back into history. Italy haven't won it yet, but Italy have still had some incredible moments. They've beaten every team except England at some point or other, including a couple of very memorable victories against France,
yeah,
which obviously they enjoyed very much. So there's plenty of stories to tell. And Italian rugby has a very interesting history anyway.
Yeah.
Italy generally has a very interesting history. So
not as old a country as you might think.
Plenty to talk about. No, not at all.
Even though people associate it with Rome. Anyway, I'm digressing into our favourite topic, which is history. You said, where should we start? I guess the best place to start is to explain how it became the Six Nations very briefly, which is it used to be the home nations.
It did, yeah. It was the very, very first competition contested between the home nations in any sport.
Yeah.
It was the OG.
The oldest sports tournament on these isles.
Indeed. So that's obviously England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales.
Yes.
And one thing that has never changed, even though Ireland is now split into two countries, Ireland still plays as a single, island.
United Ireland, yeah.
Which is nice.
It is.
And it survived the Troubles.
It did.
Even though some countries refused to go and play in Dublin during the Troubles. 1973, Wales refused to go and play in Dublin, but England were brave enough and they went and got their asses handed to them. 1973, I'm again going off topic straight away. 1973 was the only tournament where there was no winner, or everyone won, depending on which way you look at it.
Yeah, there's been a couple of tie victories, hasn't there?
Yeah, they didn't used to split by points difference or anything. If you finished level on points, you
shared it.
Shared the cup, and everyone finished with 2 wins and 2 defeats that year.
Oh, that's a good little...
But I digress immediately. No,
that's a good tidbit. Yeah, I mean, like, but there's a natural regression to that story, which is it was the home nations, it became the 5 nations when France joined, and then it became the 6 nations when Italy joined. And the history is almost as simple as that.
You've skipped a little step where it became the home nations again when France were kicked out.
Yes, okay.
For being dirty, dirty professionals.
Yeah,
or whatever it was they did, I can't even remember. Probably professionalism,
because that tends to have been the gripe in rugby union over the years, and we spoke about that a little bit, actually, didn't we, with the rugby league and the division and how league was created and so on and so forth. So
we did,
yeah. But like, it isn't a particularly complicated history. It is just kind of adding nations until you end up with 6 of them, and yeah, there we are.
It's actually been an incredibly stable tournament, yeah. Really. By any standards, there's no hint that they're going to add a 7th nation or that they're going to put promotion and relegation in, even though there are some really good countries in Europe, Georgia particularly, threatening around the edges. There's never been any real talk of it.
Well, I was going to ask you, like, how do you feel about that? How do you feel about a promotion relegation? How do you feel about an expansion to 7 or even 8 if you add Romania or Portugal or Georgia? Who else plays that's with a degree of regularity and credibility? Maybe Spain.
Maybe, yeah. How do I feel about it? I mean, from a neutral... If you're being completely objective from a sporting perspective, it makes sense. If you are at a point where you deserve to be relegated and there's another team that deserves to be promoted, there is no good argument against that. But then there is the tradition, isn't there? Can you imagine Wales in their current slump getting relegated and there not being a England-Wales game this year? Any games in Cardiff during the Six Nations? It would be incredible. It'd be wrong.
Yeah. I think I like the idea of expanding European rugby and it being more competitive
and
incentivizing a route to the top. But I also do agree with you that there aren't enough test-playing nations to really lose those flagship events, even if they are occasionally mismatches, like England-Wales was in last year's tournament, because Wales are going through a bad patch, or how, you know, certain games with Italy have been over the years, or what have you. But so, like, my preference, I think, would be an expansion. I think give the likes of Georgia and people a secondary tournament, which I think does exist already, but also give them access to the tier one nations more frequently, like happened with Italy, and then grow the tournament. So you end up with, you know, 7-8 nation tournament rather than promotion relegation.
I think up to 8 you can manage. It is a slog. I mean, it's already a slog as it is, but I think it's manageable. Then you've got the argument, is there going to be more mismatches? Is England Georgia close enough yet? But if England Georgia isn't, then certainly Wales Georgia is at the moment. In fact, Georgia may have even beaten Wales recently.
Yeah, and Italy, maybe not Italy. Yeah,
exactly.
Italy look good really at the moment. But yeah,
I was thinking maybe if you're not going to have a larger tournament, you did one promotion relegation, maybe make it over a number of years. So if a team is consistently poor and another team is consistently good and above them in the world rankings, and there's a clear mismatch, and then maybe give a playoff game to decide it. So at
playoff
least
game would be a good one or something, yeah.
You've got, I mean, if at that point Wales did find themselves getting relegated, they've only got themselves to blame. They've had, you know, 2 or 3 years of bad performances and lost a playoff game against Georgia or whoever it might turn out to be. That would be probably a good compromise. But it would still be crazy. Six Nations without Wales.
It would be a travesty, arguably.
We're talking about Wales, but you could have said the same about Scotland.
Yeah, for a period.
15 years ago or so, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though they were once, you know, Grand Slam winners, not too long ago, within our lifetime.
And so, Italy are a demonstration of why you ought not to be hasty in kicking a nation out. Because they are really, really developed in the last 3 or 4 years. Even if that's not necessarily always reflected in their league position, they are definitely as good as they have ever been.
Yeah, I've watched plenty of games, England versus Italy, and yes, Italy are yet to beat England, but they will one day. And they have given me a scare. They've been up at half time before that game in Rome a few years ago, where they just started standing on the in what looked like an offside position.
Oh, no, that was at Twickenham, wasn't it?
Was it at Twickenham?
They refused to form an offside line by not committing players to rucks. And the referee very famously told James Haskell he's not his coach when he asked him how they deal with it.
Yeah. One of the least pleasant experiences of watching rugby I've ever had in my life, that. I mean, England eventually won, but God
it was almighty. It was an ugly game. But it was smart, though. You've got to be innovative to level the playing field sometimes. Yeah. No, I mean, like, mate, you said, and I think you said it very nicely, that this has been a very consistent and therefore, by extension, very successful tournament. And I think there's something to be said about the simplicity of its format for that.
Oh, for sure.
Just a straight up league table, right?
Yeah, straight up league table. Everyone plays everyone once, all on the same weekends, so there's no bye weeks or anything like that. It's all the games are staggered, so obviously you watch one at a time. Sometimes they're Friday night. In fact, it obviously is opening up on a Thursday night this year.
Because of the Winter Olympics.
Fair enough, you don't want to go up against that. We've already said how great that tournament is. Saturdays and Sundays as well during the day. But yeah, and then at the end of it, there is a bonus point system, but if you win all your games, you're guaranteed to win. There's no way bonus points can lose you it. See, winning all your games called a Grand Slam.
Yeah.
The pinnacle of Northern Hemisphere rugby to achieve that.
Yeah, I mean, mate, the Grand Slam is, it's rare. Very rare. In fact, so rare.
That surprisingly rare.
England have the most, which surprised me because we've barely won a Grand Slam in the last 25 years. We've won a couple, but that is all. But we've got 13. Wales have 12. France, 10. Ireland only have 4, which is very surprising given how dominant they've been. And
that is surprising.
Two or three of them have come in the last 15 years. Scotland have 3. And of course, Italy have 0.
Yeah. Yes. To go with their 0 titles.
But yeah, and I
get another... know one day.
No, well, one day for sure, but like it's a long way off for Italy at the moment. The thing that's to really illustrate how rare a Grand Slam is, England are the only team to have won more than two successive Grand Slam. They did it in 1913 and 14, 1923, 24, and 91-92. So they've done it 3 times, essentially, winning successive Grand Slams. And the only other countries to have done it at all are Wales and France. So that was done in 1908, 1909 for Wales, and 1997, 1998 for France. So successive that Grand
tells
Slams
the story, yeah,
are mega rare. If you do it once, it's celebrated. But that is because, like you said, you play everyone home and all. So you play everyone once. So you only go home or away. You don't go home and away. And if you're going away to, you know, say England are going away to France this year on the last day, like, even if you've won 4 games, France away is an incredibly difficult test match. So, you know, you're certainly not guaranteed to get over the line.
No, and it's obviously staggered. So if you play 3 at home 1 year and 2 away, the next year you'll be playing 3 away and 2 at home.
Yeah.
So you alternate home and away fixtures. So it is fair in that respect. But yeah, it's a one-off, and there is no easy away game in the Six Nations unless a team is going through a particular slump.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, there's a contemporaneous example we can point to. The French are the holders. They won last year. They won 4 of their 5 fixtures. They lost to England at Twickenham in the final play of the game. England scored a try to win it under the post. And
by a point as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They had to kick it to win it.
Yeah. And
Smith.
Let's be clear here. The French fumbled a Grand Slam because they dropped the ball on the England line, like, or with the line beckoning on like 3 occasions that day. So like, even when you're playing well and clearly the better the team, as the French were that day and that tournament, they still couldn't complete the slam. So it's a big deal.
It is. And there are mini tournaments within the tournament as well, if you can call them that.
We talked about its simplicity. Now let's get into how it is complex.
So, the next most prestigious thing for, if you're one of the home nations, so England, Ireland, Scotland or Wales, is the Triple Crown. If you're to win a Grand Slam, you win the Triple Crown anyway, but if you were to lose to Italy or France, but beat all your fellow home nations, you win the Triple Crown. So,
yeah.
That's probably the next level down, certainly for, obviously,
the home nations.
France and Italy probably don't care about it so much because they can't win it. But
yeah,
do you actually get a trophy for it, or is it ceremonial?
Yeah, that's it. Like, as of 2025, I think England won 26 Triple Crowns, Wales 22, Ireland 14, Scotland 10. Yeah. And there's now a trophy for it. There didn't used to be a trophy. It was like you said, it was very ceremonial, but you now do get a, I think it's like a big plate, basically.
I mean, a crown would make more sense, but okay.
It would.
At least it's something.
I wonder if the plate represents a series of different crowns. I don't know. That is like a mini tournament. You're spot on, mate. But it's not the only trophy. I mean, we sort of glossed over the fact that if you win it, you win the championship trophy. It's called the championship trophy. Then you've got the triple crown, as you said. And then you've got a cup for every single test match.
Yeah, literally. It's crazy.
The oldest one being?
The oldest and most famous. We've already mentioned this. Weirdly, in our rugby league episode, went into detail about the Calcutta Cup. But it's the Calcutta Cup made from melted down Indian rupees, as we mentioned before, donated by the Calcutta Club, obviously in Calcutta in India. That was being played since 1879 between England and Scotland, which is the oldest, obviously the oldest countries to play any professional sport against each other.
Yeah.
Although we've had debate on that previously about USA and Canada playing the first cricket match against each other. But other than that, if that counts.
Yeah, I think it counts. Let's have a quick look here. What's the next oldest? The next oldest is relatively young. It's and I say that just because it was introduced in the same year of our birth, so it's quite a self-serving analysis of age.
Very young then, yeah. But got many years left ahead of it.
That's the Millennium Trophy, England versus Ireland, basically presented to celebrate Dublin's millennium in 1988. So that's England.
Cool.
Yeah. Next one.
Nice. Is the are you saying this to me because I have to try and pronounce it?
That's exactly why I gave it to you.
The centenary Keish?
It's Gaelic, whatever it is, and it's between Ireland versus Scotland. Introduced a year later, and it's a drinking vessel, essentially. Marked the centenary founding of the International Rugby Football Board. So that is the Irish-Scottish Cup. But there's loads of them. The Garibaldi Trophy is France versus Italy. Yeah, Garibaldi was a pretty important dude in the unification of Italy and a volunteer in the French Republican Army against Prussia. That's why it's named after him.
Yeah.
Old Alliance, France-Scotland.
the old Alliance being the Alliance against England.
Everyone hates the English in the Six Nations. We didn't really lead with that, but perhaps it's because it goes without saying. I like this one, though. The Doddy Weir Cup. In recognition of Doddy Weir, who obviously I think has now died, hasn't he, unfortunately?
But yes, he's no longer with us, sadly.
He set up the My Name's Doddy Foundation, which supports research into motor neurone disease. Obviously, Lewis Moody has recently said that he has been diagnosed with it. Rob Burrow famously had it, and Kevin Sinfield did a lot of charity work for motor neurone disease. Just, cool that it's now a mainstay of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, his name should be on stuff because he's a legend. He's a legend of Scottish rugby, legend for the Lions as well.
When we talk about Scotland, Doddy Weir comes up a lot.
Yes, of course he does. How could he not?
And then rounding off the trophies, the Quatita Cup. I think that's how you might say it. Anyway.
I'll take your word for it. Very new.
Yeah, very new. Commemorates Massimo Quatita, hopefully I'm pronouncing his surname correctly, a former Italian captain, and also the Scottish scrum coach. He died in 2021 during the pandemic at 54 due to COVID. And that's obviously the cup that's played between Scotland and Italy, the Doddy Weir Cup being Wales and Scotland. Sorry, I think I might have skipped that. All of that means that only Scotland play for a cup in every game they play in, but there is a cup for everyone if you spin it that way.
Yeah.
And the loser gets a cup.
The loser gets the thing that no one wants, and it is the original bogey prize of sport. It is the wooden spoon, the famous wooden spoon for the team that comes last, currently held by Wales, of course. As you may have already picked up from this, Wales are in a bit of a downer at the moment, although they, of course, been brilliant many times during our lifetimes.
Yeah, a golden period for them for much of it. And again,
yeah, very much so.
If you're interested in learning about Wales being good and not being rubbish, come back for our Wales episode, because guess what we're going to focus on?
Yeah, them being good, not them being rubbish. The past. It's not really not distant past, though. They were very, very good very, very recently.
Yeah.
Which obviously makes the down even harder.
It does. And if you don't just get the wooden spoon, you can get whitewashed.
Yeah, obviously that's if you lose every game, which does happen. Hasn't happened to England for a very, very long time, fortunately, but Wales and Italy more recently have had that happen to them.
I think it's happened to... since the Six Nations began, just checking the notes here, because I thought this was quite an interesting statistic. I think England and Ireland are the only two sides to have avoided finishing last. Italy have finished last 18 times and have lost all their matches in 12 occasions. But Ireland have finished bottom of the tournament, generally speaking, since it was the home nations the most, with 25, Scotland 24, Wales 19, Italy 18, England 17, and France only with 13. So it's quite interesting how the Six Nations has distorted that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, France have played in less than the home nations, obviously, because they were banned for a while and obviously joined it later. But so maybe that explains some of the fewer France and England, because France and England have always been the two best teams in the Five and Six Nations, generally speaking.
Yeah, historically.
Yeah, Ireland probably, as that stat points out, Ireland probably were the weakest in the Five Nations historically, but not to say they didn't have their moments, and they've certainly made up for it recently. One of the best teams in the world at the moment.
Yeah, for
sure. Not that they'll ever get past the World Cup quarterfinal.
Who, the Irish? Life, death, taxes, and Ireland going out in quarters. Yeah, it's just the way it goes, isn't it? And they may have well have missed their boat, because I'm probably speaking out of turn and a bit prematurely, but I think the golden era of Irish rugby might be just going over the brow of the hill. But we'll see.
Yeah.
I've been wrong before.
You have been. We both have.
But you're right, mate. Like, it's interesting that, like, since we're talking about who's come last the most, we might as well quickly mention who's won the most. England and Wales, basically, have won the championship the most times. Both got 39 titles. But England have won the most outright titles, which is your point earlier about nations quite often sharing them. So England have 29 outright, Wales 28. And then since the Six Nations began, since we're speaking about the Six Nations, only Italy and Scotland have failed to win it. Italy have got no titles at all, obviously. Scotland have 14 overall titles, Ireland 16, and France 19. If you were to take just the Six Nations, you would find that would be a lot more favourable for the Irish and the French. And the Welsh, even.
Just to throw a bone to our compatriots up north, though, they did win the final ever Five Nations title in 1999.
And if you're a Scotland fan and you're interested in learning more about that, come back for our Scottish episode, because guess what we're going to be talking about?
Funny that.
Yeah. I thought this was fascinating, mate, because you know, you were saying about the competitiveness of this tournament.
Like, yeah.
The statistics are on the internet, and the veracity of said statistics I haven't checked, but if they're to be believed, the ones I saw said that Ireland are the most successful team in terms of win, even if not trophies, because they have won 89 games in the tournament's history, in the Six Nations.
So in the Six Nations, yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Because this doesn't make sense. This would surprise me a lot if it included the Five Nations and home nations. But yeah, since Six Nations, Ireland, I can see that.
Ireland have won 68% of their games. England have won 86 games at 66%. France have won 84 games at 64%. So those three countries are separated by 5 test match wins over a 26-year period, which is
crazy.
Mad. And then Wales have got 64 and are basically a 50% win ratio. And Scotland have got 43 with 33%, and Italy have only ever won 16 games at 12%. But even if you lump Wales in and say that maybe some of those records are distorted by the early years of the Six Nations and their recent tournaments, they're flying as well. So those top four nations, I mean, Scotland probably underachieve as well in this tournament, it's probably fair to say.
Yeah, I would say so. Scotland have had a quite a long rough patch, generally speaking, compared to the good old days.
Yeah. So yeah, I was just like, if you wanted an illustration of just how mad it is, then there it is, really. Do we want to tell a story of the Six Nations generally, just to whet the appetite for the stories of the individual nations?
Oh, well, what story did he have in mind, Ben?
The final day.
I mean, I know what story you had in mind.
Of the 2015 Six Nations tournament. Insane stuff. Do you want to tell it, or do you want me to tell it?
Go on, you tell it. I'm going to sit back and let you tell it to me, because I love it.
Okay. So if I can do this justice, Wales, Ireland and England were all in contention to win it on the final day of the 2015 Six Nations. But to say that the final day exceeded expectations is probably an understatement. It was drama deluxe.
It was insane.
England started the day as leaders, so they were top of the table. But Wales went to Italy, demolished them 61-20, and then basically jumped into top spot. Because obviously they now have more points because they've played and everybody else hasn't.
Should point out here that this is the days before bonus points, just about. In fact, this might have even influenced the bonus points coming in somewhat. So points difference is at play here. That's what's going to be the deciding factor. So obviously Wales demolishing Italy has just put Ireland and England under huge pressure.
Yeah.
Right off the bat.
They've gone, what's that, 39 points. No, 41 points they've improved their points difference by slapping Italy. Ireland were next to go. They played the Scottish, knowing that they needed a 21-point victory to go past the Welsh. And the game ended 40-10. So they got their 30 point swing. So they're 9 points in terms of points difference above Wales. And they're now top with the last game still to come. And I should say, and we'll talk about this a little bit more when we talk about Italy. Italy were like mathematically in this as well, but were never actually going to win it. England then play France at Twickenham, needing a 26-point victory to win the Six Nations. Now that is a tall
unprecedented
order. Yeah, like no one beats the French for 26 points. Like not a good French side. Oh God! What preceded was an absolute humdinger. England won.
Let's just say it was a feast of attacking rugby.
God, like it was just. No one gave a shit about defending. England won. They won 55-35. It was obviously a pretty valiant effort, but they came up short by 6 points. 6 points shy of winning the championship. So Ireland took the trophy on points difference by 6 points, which is less than a try. It's two penalty kicks.
Yeah.
Less than a converted try. Two penalty kicks, which is an astonishingly small margin. 221 points scored across the last three games, which is, you know, unsurprisingly, the most ever on a Six Nations weekend. England recorded their largest ever victory against France.
England somehow managing to split the pair as well, with only those 9 points to play with, managing to come second Ireland and Wales. Crazy. Yeah.
Bizarre, isn't it? And that Wales performance, he's finishing third. It's like, that's not a third place finish. Ireland claimed their largest ever Six Nations away win, and Wales scored the most amount of tries in a single championship half. All in all, pretty historic.
And Scotland came last with 0 points, having lost all their games.
Whitewashed, wooden spoon, see ya. Yeah, mate, a quite astonishing tournament. And if you get half of that, this tournament, we're in for some fun.
We certainly are. It's rare that, I mean, I don't know if, I guess statistically it can be sewn up before the final day if you compare to have all lost a couple of games already, but it doesn't really happen, does it?
No.
There's always something to play for going into that final weekend, especially with the bonus points on show as well, so.
Yeah, even when teams are going for Grand Slams, if they're playing second place, for example, then second place can leapfrog the team going for the Grand Slam, technically.
Yeah.
And it has been done, and we shall talk about it, Wales fans. So yeah, look, it's a really good tournament, and it is stacked with Northern Hemisphere talent. There's a player of the tournament award. Who cares what the methodology is? It changes all the time. It's absolutely mental. Now it's basically a fan vote, but if you want to...
Backs always win it, which is disgraceful.
Backs do always win it. That's an excellent point, actually.
Yeah, don't like to see it. Although, they always win it. It's 5 forwards to 17 backs, but close enough.
Yeah, it's pretty... I mean, that is pretty...
You backs always getting the credit. Us forwards never getting any credit at all.
True. Although, in the interest of balance, the most wins is Brian O'Driscoll, who was rather good, and Antoine DuPont, who is rather good.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
They both have 3 each. So that accounts for 16 of those 17 backs. Six of those 17 backs. Louis Bierbieri is the holder. He's rather good. So, yeah. And then, like, a couple of the other win. I mean, the forwards that have won, Paul O'Connell. Alan Wynne-Jones.
Alan Wynne-Jones, yeah.
Yeah. Don't know if I can find any others off the top of my head. Paul O'Connell's pretty unlucky, actually. He's only got one win from five nominations.
Mm.
Yeah. Only other player to have won it more than once, though, is Stuart Hogg, who's also pretty good.
He has his moments.
I thought, interestingly, no fly half or number eight has ever won it.
Really?
Yeah.
That is surprising.
Very,
when you consider the quality of fly halves this tournament has had.
Oh, for sure.
Sexton, like, and Wilkinson and Jones and the rest.
Yeah, loads of them. Yeah, bizarre, really. Fullbacks won the most, five. No front row has ever won it, but that's unsurprising. So basically...
It is. I mean, you're talking about forwards never getting the credit. The front row, multiply that by 10.
Yeah.
Never get any credit at all.
Yeah.
I'm not bitter.
No, clearly it's not translating on this either. Gordon Darcy, the inaugural winner.
Of course. And the legend is.
Talking of player records, I mean, you mentioned him already. Sexton, most points, 566. Wilkinson, most individual points in a game, most points in an individual season. Number of appearances, Sergio Parise, the legendary Parise. 69 apps, all starts, most tries in
a
season.
That's insane.
That is insane, isn't it? Most tries in a season, Louis Barbieri bagged 8, also with a couple of people from bygone years. O'Driscoll's got the most tries, 26. I mean, look, if you want to see the creme de la creme of Northern Hemisphere rugby, there's only one tournament to watch. It's going to be very fun.
Yeah, and if you're in the UK, you can watch it on BBC and ITV, or it'll be STV in Scotland, or whatever it is elsewhere, but... I don't know about the rest. I don't know about France. I don't know about Italy, but I'm pretty certain that if you go into any pub, bar, anywhere, they'll be playing the game, especially if the particular team in that country is playing.
Definitely. It will be on everywhere every weekend. So tune in if you fancy it. A lot of people do, actually. A lot of people just watch rugby that don't even watch rugby. So
I think there's a lot of rugby fans, particularly rugby more than any other sport, where people are international fans without knowing almost anything about the club game whatsoever. And the pinnacle of rugby every year, other than World Cup years, for Northern Hemisphere fans is, of course, the Six Nations.
It is. So, yeah. And I endorse that because it makes for a fun atmosphere. And it does get a little bit tribal, but it's lighthearted. So shall we leave it there so that you can try and get this out before the first kickoff, which is France versus Ireland in Paris tonight, 8:05, or which was in Paris tonight at 8:05.
I've got 3 hours, mate. I can do it. I've done it before.
I believe in you. And our first country that we're going to preview is going to be Italy. No, it's going to be Wales. Sorry, it's going to be Wales, because we're doing it in reverse order from last year's standing. And we've got a proper bumper episode coming for the Super Bowl. So,
yeah, proper episode. I will try and keep it under 2 hours.
Nice. All right. Well, looking forward to doing that with you, mate. And I shall speak to you very shortly.
Indeed. Enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks.
Same goes to everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us to start our Six Nations series. Technically out in time for kickoff of the opening match by the barest of margins. Apologies for my voice today. A bit huskier than normal. If you're weirdly into it and want to tell a friend about the podcast, that would be amazing. If not, then you can console me by liking or subscribing or commenting on this. Our theme tune is Oh Yeah by Harmony Productions. You can find us on Blue Sky and Instagram at The Sporting Almanac. We'll see you again soon for the Super Bowl and more Six Nations. Until then, have a wonderful weekend, people. Good night.